brings a gun to a school and the parents are charged with a crime. What are your feelings on that? Let's just drop that bomb right in the middle of the church and see what happens. What do you guys think about parents and having to take responsibility for children? Oh, Daisy, you've got something to say? How did the kid get the gun? So you're thinking if mom and dad aren't doing their job, maybe they should be prosecuted? Maybe they should go to jail?
Yeah, because they shouldn't have a gun in the house either.
Okay, good. Thank you. Ryan. Yeah. What happened? This is. We're gonna get everyone on every side of the debate on this one because this was a hard one to think about. It. Well, if the kid did it, maybe the kid did it without the parents' knowledge, and so should the parents then be punished for that? Yes. I don't know how old the kid was. Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, and I believe in this particular story, I believe the kid did get it from the parent. I didn't reread the story, so I just saw a quick little news snippet. So you're thinking there's got to be blame all around. You know, both of these entities were at fault. Yeah, good. Jim. Okay, so would you say then that it's the child's fault? The parents' fault. You would say, prosecute them puppies, throw them in jail. Yeah. Anyone else? Yes. What? Yes. It's both. Throw both the kid and the parent in jail. They could share a cell. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I don't know. So you're going with what Sydney, like both are responsibility. Yes. Yes, Louise. Right. Good. Blame both. Amy. Yeah, good. Scott. Oh yeah, when is the child old enough to be handling a gun in the first place? Yeah, now we're getting even into more sticky situations, which is, you know, it's a good thing to talk about. Oh, I'm not taking away any gun. I don't have that power. So... Oh, okay, so they got misdemeanors for... Yeah. Right, yeah. Don, did you have your hand raised? Right, firearms in the home, and you trained them properly, goes back to the parent, so you would put more onus on the parent. Yeah. Dave.
Do we know where the kid got the gun?
He got them from the parent, but I don't know, like, I didn't reread the story, so I didn't know how he accessed it, whether it was under lock and key.
It was the parent's gun,
yes. Maricela. Would it have been different if it was alcohol? Yeah, so let's change so then we're not on gun ownership. Now we're going to say kid throws a party and uses parents' alcohol. Do you prosecute the parent? Yeah. This is a really hard and difficult subject because we're getting into the question of who's responsible in certain situations. And it's hard because we often go to whoever is kind of the most responsible, so to speak, and those that are maybe more ignorant or more younger, we tend to let off the hook. This is the question that is coming then before the Israelite nation about who's responsible religiously for sins, specifically against God and against the sanctuary. Last week we had a very short, I know it was really weird. Some of you were like, what? That was the shortest sermon you ever gave. Well, that was because I think there was only 13 verses in all of Numbers 17. So we covered it and boom, we were done. Here we now, I think the chapter break is unfortunate because it continues on with this question of these people going, well, now that they're all dead, the leaders of this rebellion, plus 250 people that were with them, plus 150,000 or so dying in a plague, now they're wondering, we have upset God so much, and who's responsible for this action, and can we ever approach God ever again, and how do we live our lives now after experiencing this incredibly wrathful act of God? This is where we again, we find the Israelite nation. They are still at the border of the promised land. They are still waiting to start their 40-year journey around before entering into the promised land. And they are all worried, are we just simply all going to die? And in one respect, they are. First of all, they are all going to die, just like we are all going to die. Secondly, God said, you're going to die out in the desert, so I raise up a new group in order to go into the promised land. But their question is a little bit more immediate, like, what do we do to, how do we approach God, this holy God that has set up these rules so that we are safe religiously? Check out who God deems as the responsible party. Numbers 18. The Lord said to Aaron, which, by the way, is rather strange. The Lord never talks to Aaron. The Lord always talks to Moses, exactly. So now all of a sudden, Aaron is approached directly. And I think this is appropriate. Again, Aaron was the one that was chosen. It was his rod that blossomed with the almonds and the buds. And so God now comes and speaks directly to Aaron, which is really cool. You, your sons, and your father's family are to bear the responsibility for offenses against the sanctuary. And you and your sons alone are to bear the responsibility for offenses against the priesthood. Wow. That's rather, who here agrees with this? Who here wants to disagree with God? We're a little gun shy going, I don't know if I want to disagree with God. But it sounds a little strange. But this, if you ever, if you've ever been in charge of something, if you ever have had a child, or if you are a youth, if you have ever been responsible for something, you realize that eventually the buck does have to stop somewhere. And God is saying, look, I'm going to make it so that Aaron, you're the one that's responsible. Now, this is a very important thing. I know it doesn't really affect you per se, but I know it affects pastors. I am spiritually responsible for you. That's a pretty heavy load. I don't mind that load because when you bear responsibility for someone, it is easy when you actually care about them. When you say, I don't mind because I'm invested in you. I'm invested in your life. I want to see you succeed. I want to see you grow and blossom spiritually. I'm the one responsible. If you end up going off the deep end, joining a cult, shaving your head, and sacrificing chickens every Saturday night, I'm actually gonna lose sleep over that. I will be worried. Because I care about all of you. I care about what happens to you. So it's the priesthood that has now said, you need to take responsibility. Because these people don't know what they're doing. They're having a difficult time learning what it means to serve in this capacity, learning what it means to follow God appropriately. You're the one responsible. So if you are in any way, shape, or form, if something happens with your child, you're responsible, right? If something happens and you're running an event, you're the one responsible. I'm responsible for you. And I want to let you know that I like that. And I don't mind that because I care about all of you. Verse 2. Bring your fellow Levites from your ancestral tribe to join you and assist you when you and your sons minister before the tent of testimony. They're to be responsible to you and are to perform all the duties of the tent, but they must not go near the furnishings of the sanctuary or the altar or both. They and you will die. So it's not enough for a pastor or a leader to just say, well, I hope they do it right. No, they're, their very lives are in their hands. And it's also not something that Aaron is the only one responsible. They're throwing a whole bunch of other Levites that are also responsible. They are to join you to be responsible for the care of the tent of meeting, all the work of the tent, and no one else may come near where you are. Verse 5, you are to be responsible for the care of the sanctuary and the altar so that my wrath will not fall on the Israelites again. I myself have selected your fellow Levites from among the Israelites as a gift to you, dedicated to the Lord, to do the work at the tent of meeting. But only you and your sons may serve as priests in connection with everything at the altar and inside the curtain. I am giving you the service of the priesthood as a gift. Anyone else who comes near the sanctuary must be put to death. Again, hopefully it's a good attitude. I know that I've met pastors who have difficulties in this because they don't see the priesthood, they don't see being a pastor as something that is a blessing. But I count it as a huge blessing. They do a lot of stats, they've done a lot of interviews, and pastors have to endure a lot. We get yelled at, screamed at, we get told we're no good, you know, oh, you've got to be there for me at all times, but you also got to be out there with the community. You got to take care of everything that's going on within the church, and you better provide us with good music and good communion bread, and you know, hopefully all the tables are set up, and make sure that the PowerPoint is running correctly. And sometimes it does get overwhelming, but that's okay, because pastors actually have the highest degree of satisfaction in their job. Am I satisfied with my job? I love it. I love it. Sometimes it's frustrating, sometimes it's difficult, sometimes it's challenging, but I want you to know how thankful I am for all of you and for the work that we get to do together. Verse 8, you like the heading there? Offerings for priests and Levites. It is Pastor Appreciation Month. You shall give. Now, I know what I am supposed to preach, but I will not, because that's just how I roll. This is a section that we're supposed to be talking about what it means to give to God, and after giving to God, it goes for the benefit of the priest and the priesthood. In theological terms, we would call this the giving of the tithe. I want to let you know from the bottom of my heart, thank you, because I watch finances. The board of directors watches the finances, and right now, Searchlight Ministries is now. And I'm breaking all the rules. I know. I'm not supposed to say we are doing really well as a congregation financially, because then that is going to cause you to start giving less. But I don't believe that that's true, because I don't think you give because there's a need. I believe that you guys give because that's just what you do. And for that, I am extremely grateful, as I was chatting with some people who get upset because sometimes all you get is the hammer job. Like, you better give, you better give. Stop drinking your Starbucks and donate that money to the church, for heaven's sake, right? You hear that, and all that causes you to do is shut down and turn off. But when you are in a place where you are fed, when you are loved, when you are excited about ministry, then you give. And that is the concept of this tithe. So I want to read this, but I'm going to tell you how, after reading this and praying about this all, I got a totally different message that I'm going to be turning on its head, and I really want to share with you. So, then the Lord said to Aaron, I myself have put you in charge of the offerings presented to me, all the holy offerings the Israelites give me, I give to you and your sons as your portion and regular share. You are to have the part of the most holy offerings that is kept from the fire, from all the gifts they bring me as most holy. All the offerings, whether grain or sin or guilt offerings, that part belongs to you and your sons. Eat it as something most holy. Every male shall eat it. You must regard it as holy. So the concept behind this is the Levites, were they supposed to be farmers or cattle raisers? No. Their job was one thing and one thing only, to serve in a religious capacity as the oversight religiously of the people, especially when you're looking at, you know, over a million people wandering through the desert. This is an important thing. Now, of course, if you're a Levite, the question then becomes, where do I get my food from? How do I eat and survive? And the answer is, it's from the people. Everyone now gives of their bounty to God. Some of it is put in the fire, which I really like. That's, you know, it's just burned up. It's given to God. No one gets it except for God. And then there is this portion that's given to the priests. And that's how they live and survive. And that's how we actually do church. This way of functioning with priests and pastors living has survived for thousands and thousands of years because this was the setup. Now, it's not a requirement. I know a lot of pastors. I just spoke with a pastor who was talking about how he is only a volunteer pastor. He has a regular job outside, and that's where he gets his money. And then when he serves the church, he takes no money from the church. And by doing this, that's his way of giving to God. That's a great way to do it as well. Not required, but it is also a new way that it happens. This is how the tithe is supposed to work. Let's keep reading. Verse 11, this is also yours. Whatever is set aside from the gifts of all the wave offerings of the Israelites, I give this to you and your sons and daughters as your regular share. Everyone in your household who is ceremonially clean may eat it. This is the bread products because, you know, we all love carbs, right? We need to, you know, Olive Garden breadsticks, you know, wave that before God and then give me some to eat. I give you all the finest olive oil and all the finest new wine and grain they give the Lord as the first fruits of their harvest. That's the word first fruits. That's the concept. And again, it's a question, and this is where it's really going to actually end up. It's a question of trust. If you were an olive, is that a farmer? I don't know what an olive grower, you get that first group or the grapes. The grape harvest starts coming in and you get that first little batch. God says, I want that part. And you might go, wait a second. I'm a little nervous though. What happens if the sun scorches the rest of the grapes? What happens if there's a drought? What happens if I give God this 10% and then there's nothing left afterwards? That's a real fear. And I think people have that fear even to this day. People are scared sometimes to give to the church because will I have any left over for myself? So don't be ashamed of that fear. That's a rational, normal fear. And what it does is God is teaching this concept of trust and reliance upon Him. He's saying, you give me the first fruits, and then after that, you'll see that I will take care of you from there. Hard way to trust. Learning how to trust God is important. This is also the reason why I think that pastors sometimes have a struggle as well. Because it's easy for me to say, trust in God, but is it a lot harder for myself to actually do it? What kind of trust does a pastor or a priest from the Old Testament have to have? He has to have now double trust. He's got to trust that God is going to provide for the needs of his people and give them sustenance and rain and the proper temperature to grow their crops and no diseases among the cattle so they don't die. He's got to trust that God is going to provide for the needs of his people, and then he's got to trust that God will move in the hearts of his people to actually then give. Double trust. I like that. I like that because I should never ask anything of you that I'm not willing myself to also do. In learning how to trust in God is one of the hardest things that is out there. If you don't learn how to trust God voluntarily, God will often put stuff into your life so that you will trust God under compulsion. Let me give you an example. Some of you may know, I always forget who's heard the story or not, but my wife and I were in a very terrible car accident, November 9th, 1991. I've gone over the story before, but there's other parts of the story that you may not have heard because I often don't bring them up. They're ancillary stories that happen. Prior to the accident, my wife and I, we would lead this Bible study on the campus, and it was affectionately called Bible Readers Pizza Eaters, B-R-P-E. Throw a U in there, and you've got burp, which is appropriate for Heather. This is true. This is totally true. I don't make this stuff up. This is real-life stories here. And so we're leading this stuff, and I remember that there came a time when we were talking to each other about what does it mean to actually trust in God and what does it mean to actually grow in faith to God. And so I don't know who was the leader. I don't know if I was doing it or it was Heather, or if it was Mary or Monica. But the lesson came out about how does God need to grow you spiritually? And what is it? What is the one area that you really need help with? And so I wrote it down on a piece of paper what I needed help in. I said, I need a better prayer life. Here I am getting ready to go to seminary. I'm leading Bible studies, I'm teaching songs, and yet in terms of prayer, I really was not that strong. It really wasn't something that was on my radar. I was too busy to pray. I didn't have enough time to pray, and I didn't have any desire to pray. Right now, Pam's like, yeah, because she's like a total prayer person. But that's where I was at, and I needed help with that. And I remember after writing that, I really didn't do anything with that because I just really didn't care about prayer a whole lot. After we got into the car accident, I had to learn something. I had to learn how helpless I was in the situation. Guys, we're in charge, right? We know how to take charge. We know how to fix things. If there is a problem, we'll address it. We'll take care of something. And let me tell you how frustrating it was for me being in a hospital bed, completely and utterly put down myself because I was in such physical pain because of the injuries I sustained. But then hearing from the nurses that Heather was in a coma, because all I wanted to do was go over there because I could fix it. I could help somehow. I'm sure of it. And it was really tough because I was laid up. I could not move. I was in such pain myself. So there was only one thing left for me to do. Pray. And so I did. It was my only thing I could do. And I prayed and I prayed and I prayed and I prayed. And it was really tough because there came a time finally they were going to release me from the hospital. So, of course, what was I going to do? First thing was I was going to go see Heather. And her parents were very wise, and they had her moved to Van Nuys so that after I was released from the hospital, I would just go back to my hometown of Vacaville and not be worried about that and just simply focus on my own recovery. So I get out. I can't see Heather. I go home. What do? I pray. I pray and I pray because that's all I know how to do. That's the only thing I can do. It's what it means to learn how to trust in God, even though you want to take care of it. And I remember so vividly when we came back to college and we were getting ready. It was a time for Bible readers, pizza eaters. And I pulled out my guitar and I looked down in my guitar case and there was this folded piece of paper. And I was wondering, what in the world is that folded piece of paper? And I opened it up and I said, and I almost started weeping right there because it said, I need to learn how to pray. And I realized that God, because I was so lazy, because I was unmotivated, because I didn't know what it meant to really trust in God in certain situations, since I couldn't do it voluntarily, he did it under compulsion. And I'm thankful for that. I know this just happened recently to a friend who is having a really hard time with church. Do you ever get angry at church? Do you ever get upset at what churches do or how they act? Never Searchlight, I know. and this person had a real struggle with what was going on inside churches to the point where maybe it's time to just write it off altogether, right? And then he got sick. And while he was sick, he was wondering why in the world is all this stuff happening in churches and why is all that negative things happening? And maybe it's time to, and guess, while he was sick, guess what happened? Guess who visited him all day long? People from the church. And it was really a shock to him because he was like, I can't really believe this, that I'm learning what it means to rely on an entity that I actually don't like. It's helping me to learn to rely on a God who I think maybe has walked away from everything. And it's really tough when we are in those positions because our faith is not really strong in terms of reliance upon God. And so we have to learn it. And so God often allows some very nasty situations to take place. And though we may cry out why, may we also remember what happens after that takes place, is there's often a huge, tremendous amount of growth. Learning how to trust in God is something that we as members of the Christian church, members of Christ's body, that is one of the most important actions that we're doing. Growing, learning, trusting. And let me tell you, it is easier, in my opinion, to voluntarily trust in God than it is to do it under compulsion. Would you agree with that? I might be wrong, but I think that's right. I found that when I say, you know what, I need to learn to grow in my prayer life, that I should find a way to grow in that. I need to grow, and what does it mean to trust in God? Well, how do I trust in God more? Maybe I need to live in such a way so that my kids see how I'm trusting in God. Maybe I'm worried about a job promotion. Well, how do I learn how to trust in God knowing that He's going to take care of things? Maybe I'm applying for a college. Well, how do I know which college to go to? Is it going to be the right college? Am I going to be worried about this or that? How am I going to pay for it? And maybe even parents, how are we going to pay for it? And what does it mean then to learn how to trust that God is going to supply? And this also then for the Israelite nation, how do we trust that God is going to provide beyond this giving that we have? And how do pastors and leaders trust not only that God is going to provide for all of your needs, which is what I pray for, but that He then moves in your heart so that my needs end up getting taken care of? Yes? Yes. Yeah. Jody had said that, have you ever prayed for someone who is not a believer, and then you tell them, I've been praying for you, and then all of a sudden they get better? Yeah. They don't know what to do. They don't know what to do because they don't know what it means to really trust in God. They don't know what it means to trust in the power that He has, that He is going to take care of and watch over us. We all have issues with trust. But they think differently. Oh, absolutely, because they have a totally different worldview. Yeah, yeah. And if you don't know this, Jody is. We've talked about some people like that one story. I still can't get over it. A person was going in for surgery. He's going to come and visit. Okay. Now, what was the organ that he was?
He had a cancer kidney.
Oh, that's right. So he's going in for surgery on a kidney. So he's got cancer in his kidney. And when they went to operate, they operated on the wrong kidney. They took the wrong kidney out. So, because we all know we can survive on one kidney. Oh, you got a report on Friday? Yeah. So they had to then go in and take out part of the other kidney because the good kidney now is somewhere else. And he actually survived and he's doing okay. You have to have 18%, and his is running at 38%. Yeah. I wonder if he prayed before this, Lord, show me if you're real. I'll show you how real I am. I'll take away your good kidney, leave you with a cancerous kidney, and show you how to trust in me. Hard lessons. Hard lessons for all of us to live. Because I know if you're anything like me, and I'm going to speak to the guys, because guys, we have this problem. If it's up to us, we'll take care of it, right? If it's up to us, we're gonna solve the problem. But what does it mean then to trust that God will take care of an issue even when you don't feel comfortable in it? Jim.
Sometimes there's spiritual things that we desire, but we can really step out in our own flesh trying to acquire it.
Oh, yeah.
And I've learned that when those times come, it's best to ask for God's will to be done and show me your way.
Yeah, because we have this interesting balance, and it's a balance that I still haven't quite figured out completely, which is how much do we rely on God and how much do we put in our own effort and energy, right? Because I've often said this, dear Lord, please help my grass to get mowed because it's overgrown. Well, maybe God is calling you to start the mower up and mow the lawn, for heaven's sake. It's your job. But then at the same time, how much do I then trust that God's going to provide for something? And it is a hard balance. But again, you see it all throughout, especially for the Israelite community. They've already heard that they're not allowed to become workaholics. Because if it were me, like, oh, well, I've got to work. And after I work, I've got to give a certain amount to the priest. Part of it's going to just be burned up. Part of it that the priests are going to eat. Oh, that's fabulous. What I'll do is I'll just work a little bit extra. And after working a little bit extra, I will then replace that income and then I'll be fine. Are we trusting in God anymore? And this is also against exactly what God said. This is what people started to do. They just started working on the Sabbath day. Let's just work another day. And God said, no, you can't do it. You can't accomplish it that way. Learning what it means to say, God, I trust that you are going to provide for me even when I don't see the way, even when I have a problem. Because we sing these songs, great is thy faithfulness. Do we really believe that? I know we're supposed to say we believe that. We're sitting here in church. It's the appropriate response. Is God faithful? Will God let us go? Will God let us down? No. No, he never will. But half the times we live our life as if he's going to. Half the times we live our life as, you know, I don't know if God's really got me. Which is why, again, I'm amazed at what God then is requiring. Not of just of the people. Because, again, this is supposed to be a giving sermon. This is supposed to be give to the church so that I can eat and buy my Starbucks. But that's, I'm looking at it more from an issue of trust. That what God asks of the people, he asks double of the pastors. Yes, Amy. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that is the hard part. You know, God said, you're going to have a kid. And he says, oh, okay, so there must be only one way to solve that because my wife is barren. I'm going to go and have relationships with my handmaiden. I mean, doesn't that sound like a smart move? Well, the best part was just, by the way, don't get all mad at Abraham. Do you want to know who came up with the idea? It was Sarah that came up with the idea. Like, hey, honey, I'm not going to have any kids, so here's my handmaiden, you know. Have fun with her. No, like, who comes up with it? This is one of those things when we strive too much in our own power, it often, maybe I can say, maybe even every time, blows up in our face in some way. Learning how to trust in God that he's going to provide is good. I think we've all been there, right? Have we all had a point in our life when we have had to struggle so much because we didn't have anything? Sometimes people ask that of me, you know. We fielded questions sometimes from family members who think that Heather and I live the perfect life. Well, because we do. We have the perfect life, right? We have no issues, no problems. Heather and I never fight, right? We got perfect children. They're always perfect. No, even Joshua says no. Listen to that. That's fabulous. Our lives, you know, we got our, you know, 4-bedroom, 2-house. We live in the city of Orange. You know, our life is perfect. Our lives have not always been that way. When we were first married and we went to seminary in St. Louis, have you ever been to St. Louis? Is that just not the armpit of America? I really do. Like, Heather wants to go back. I don't understand her. She makes no sense to me whatsoever. Yet, it does have Ted Drews. You are correct. I give you that. It does have Ted Drews. I'm talking more, yeah. I didn't really like it. I had a really hard time. But often people wonder, how did we survive? Because while we were there, I was in seminary. So I'm in grad school. So how much money am I making? Zero. I'm actually losing money because I'm spending money on my education. And my wife is an intern, a DCE intern. Now, DCEs get paid nothing. And so interns get paid less than nothing, right? So it's really awesome because we've got to pay for our rent and stuff like that. We found a place and we paid $440 a month for a 2-bedroom place, rat-infested, cockroach-infested. Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. You would go to the kitchen in the middle of the night and turn on the lights, and everything would move, but you're not too sure what it was. What was that? And then the time when we pulled open the drawer to our towels, and there was a family of mice living there, and we're like, sorry to bother you, and we closed the drawer. And I don't think we opened it up, and we ate pizza a lot. Papa John's pizza was right around the corner. It was $5. You get a large pizza, just split it in half. You can have some for breakfast and then some for dinner. Yeah, we learned what it's like to struggle and suffer. And during those times, we learned what it meant to trust, what to give to God. Now, I was not always the best in this. So I'm going to give you a confession of how I used to treat God and giving. I used to say to God, I will give to you on Sunday morning anything left in my wallet from that week. Isn't that a great idea? No, this is the dumbest idea I've ever come up with. But I thought, this is a great idea. And so you know what I would be doing on Saturday nights? What is that? It's a preview for the movie? It's only 10:40. Or is that come? Wow. Okay. Are they really saying, what? I think we may need to try and find someone. Alex, thank you. Yeah, we love the commercials and all, but maybe we're not right now. So I was starting to learn what it meant to trust in God was no trust in God because I just give him whatever my leftovers were. But then when I learned about what it meant to trust in God, because God graciously actually provided something for us that we were really shocked. I remember the note put on my door. I opened the door. There was a note from the management. For this month, you owe us $50. And I went, well, that doesn't make any sense. $50, our rent is $440. So I didn't know what to do. Like, was this a mistake? Do I just not say anything and hope that, you know, it's right? Or do I say something? Oh, I got to find out. So I went down to the manager's office. I said, what's going on? They said, someone gave a cashier's check for $390 to pay for your rent. And then I started learning, oh, wait a second. So even when I'm faithless, God is faithful. And in doing that, he was teaching me, you don't have to worry. You can trust in me. I will take care of you. This is what it means to grow in faith. This is what it means to live in such a way that God is the one that is getting all the glory. When you can if you can handle your own life, then you don't need God. And if you don't need God, then you're in a lot of trouble. Learning what it means to trust in God is huge. All right, let's keep going. Where am I at? 14, thank you, Louise. She's like, 14, because you still got a lot of verses to cover. Again, a lot of this is just actually relatively repeat material. I actually covered this several weeks ago about what it means to give offerings to God. Verse 14, everything in Israel that is devoted to the Lord is yours. The first offspring of every womb, both man and animal, that is offered to the Lord is yours. But you must redeem every firstborn son and every firstborn male of unclean animals. So what would happen is you would either donate the cow and you would give it to the priest, or you would buy the cow back saying, I really like this firstborn cow, I'm going to keep it, and you pay that money. Same thing with adults or children. If you have a firstborn son, that belongs to God. Give them over to the priests for service. Or you can spend some money and buy them back. And I know some of you are like, "Woo, that would have been great to get rid of a couple of firstborn children I don't like." Yeah. Your lastborn kid, you're fine. I would pay for Bubba. I love Bubba. Verse 16, when they are a month old, you must redeem them at the redemption price set at 5 shekels of silver, according to the sanctuary shekel, which weighs 20 gerahs. But you must not redeem the firstborn of an ox or a sheep or a goat. They are holy. Sprinkle their blood on the altar and burn their fat as an offering made by fire, an aroma pleasing to the Lord. Their meat is to be yours, just as the breast of the wave offering and the right thigh are yours. So a little bit of white meat, a little bit of dark meat. I like the breast, personally. Thigh, I don't know. I'm not really into the thigh, but I'd give that to someone else. Their meat is to be, whatever is set aside from the holy offerings the Israelites present to the Lord, I give to you and your sons and daughters as your regular share. It is an everlasting covenant of salt before the Lord for both you and your offspring. The Lord said to Aaron, again, this is a conversation he's having with Aaron, which is interesting. Again, Aaron's not getting the second hand. And isn't that great when God does that? I mean, I love it when God uses me to speak to you. I really find that as a blessing. When you come and you shake my hand and you say, wow, it was like you were speaking directly to me. I find that just horribly fascinating, because God sometimes uses me to give messages to you. But you know what's really best is when you are in prayer and you are in communion with God and relationship with him in such a way that God speaks directly to you. That's fantastic. Yay. Thank you, Alex. I don't know if you can hear us. Verse 20, the Lord said to Aaron, you will have no inheritance in the land, nor will you have any share among them. I am your share and your inheritance among the Israelites. Again, that's a hard part for the Israelites to learn. Like, I've got to learn to live off the generosity of others. Who here likes to live off the generosity of others? Absolutely nobody. Absolutely nobody. We hate having to rely on the goodness of someone else. And there is no one worse at it than pastors. I despise it when I'm sick, because then you all want to pray for me and take care of my family, and I don't like it, because I'll take care of them, thank you very much. I hate it when I'm having issues, because then some of you come to me and preach my own sermons back to me. Stop it, that's very annoying, because I want to take care of myself. But then I realize something. Do you know the joy I get when I get to minister to people? When they're going through difficult times, hard times, maybe sick times, maybe problems in school, maybe problems at work. Do you know the joy I have of praying for you and with you? And is it right for me to rob that joy of you when you want to give that back to me? This is a lesson that's very hard for me to learn. And I still learn it. So I thank you for all your patience on this. But this is what God is saying. You need to learn what it means to accept help from one another. You need to learn what it's like to say you do not have all the answers. You will never have all the answers. I do not have all the answers. But it's in that fellowship that we have one with another. It's in learning to love one another and care for one another that we actually see the body of Christ in its greatest form. Maybe you're tough. Maybe you haven't shared the issues that are going on in your life with me or with anyone else because you're scared, because you want to do it all yourself. And all I can tell you is you are robbing God of the joy of working through the people around you to help, to love, to pray for. And I have found it that when a church works together that way, the church is never down all at the same time. Some of you are going through great times, and I'm so thankful for that. You guys are like raring to give and to share love with one another and to take care and help one another out. Some of you, though, are not. And it's great that God designs it that way. I found that he does that a lot in Heather and I's marriage. When I'm having a bad day, she's having a good day. When she's having a bad day, I'm having a good day. When we're both having good days, that's great. And very rarely do we have bad days at the same time. Very rarely. I think that's how God designed us to be. Verse 21. I'm going to keep going. I give to the Levites all the tithes in Israel as their inheritance in return for the work they do while serving at the tent of meeting. From now on, the Israelites must not go near the tent of meeting or they will bear the consequences of their sin and will die. It is the Levites who are to do the work at the tent of meeting and bear the responsibilities for offenses against it. Did you hear what just happened? Who's responsible for the sin? Both. You're responsible for your own actions, for heaven's sake, okay? Man up, take responsibility. But at the same time, we're also responsible one for another. And I know we don't like that either. I know that if you mess up, I'm going to distance myself from you as quickly as possible. That's the American way. But that's not God's way. God's way says, am I my brother's keeper? And the answer to that is, yes, you are. When someone around you is struggling, that is your time to go and help and assist and share and rebuke and pray for and love and to care for one another. We all bear responsibility for each other. This is a lasting ordinance. So is this ended at all? Or do we keep going? Yeah, it's still going on. It's a lasting ordinance for the generations to come. They will receive no inheritance among the Israelites. Instead, I give to the Levites as their inheritance the tithes that the Israelites present as an offering to the Lord. This is why I said concerning them, they will have no inheritance among the Israelites. The Lord said to Moses, speak to the Levites and say to them, when you receive from the Israelites the tithe I give to you as your inheritance, you must present a tenth of that tithe as the Lord's offering. Wait a second. You mean pastors are supposed to tithe? No, I don't want to. I'm living off of your generosity. I'll just keep it all myself. No, even the Israelite nation, and guess what it was supposed to be done? It was supposed to be burned up and just given over. I love it. Your offering will be reckoned to you as grain from the threshing floor, juice from the winepress, and this way you will also present an offering to the Lord from all the tithes you receive from the Israelites. From these tithes, you give the Lord's portion to Aaron the priest. You must present as Lord's portion the best and holiest part of everything given to you. Wouldn't that be stinky to be Aaron then? Because who does he have to trust in? So he's got to trust that God's going to take care of the people. And then he's got to trust that the people are actually going to give a tenth to the priests. And then he's got to trust that the priests are actually going to give their tenth to him so that he has something to eat. Wow. With greater responsibility comes greater trust. Say to the Levites, when you present the best part, not the leftovers of what's in your wallet, the best part. When you present the best part, it will be reckoned to you as the product of the threshing floor of the winepress. You and your households may eat the rest of it anywhere, for it is your wages for your work at the tent of meeting. By presenting the best part of it, you will not be guilty in this matter. Then you will not defile the holy offerings of the Israelites, and you will not die. I wanted to end with this one thought because I was very intrigued by it, and I was reading a commentary on this whole idea of giving, and there seems to be several different tithes mentioned in Scripture. And we're usually familiar with the regular tithe that we're talking about, the giving of God, giving of your resources to God for the work of the priest. But there is also another tithe that's mentioned in another location in the Bible, and I was very fascinated. And I think it's great that it was at this time that Helen was talking about the homeless ministry, because one of the tithes that we also give is a gift to others who don't have anything. It's actually designed for the widows and the orphans. And I know that sometimes there's this guilt thing. Like, no, give all your money to the church. I want all your money. But some of you go, but I got a heart for people that have nothing. Is that holy? Is that reckoned to God as part of your gift? The answer is yes. I know that sometimes people are like, no. Don't give to those other organizations. They're shysters. They'll take your money. Give it to the church. We'll handle it well ourselves, right? And then you're like, I don't know if I really trust it. This idea that any gift that you give for the benefit of others is a tithe. That is a gift to God that is holy and righteous. And God gives great promises when we give, especially for those who have nothing. So the work that we do for the homeless ministry is huge. And what a great way that we can give to God in that way. Let's pray. Lord, forgive us for our lack of trust. Forgive us because many a times we think we can handle it on ourselves. We are either way too confident in our own abilities or we are just not trusting that you are going to take care of us. And both of those are sins. And Lord, I think all of us here have had times when we have trusted in you in some weird way. You know, maybe it's through a gift to the church or a gift to the homeless or trusting in what college we go to or a problem is happening at work and we're turning it over to you to solve in some way. Help us to voluntarily put down our own agenda and our own life and simply just respond to you in faith. Grow our faith, Lord, for we need that. We often cry out as the disciples did, Lord, increase our faith. And you have promised that when we cry out in that way, you are faithful and you are just. You forgive us for our lack of faith and then you grow our faith. Lord, I pray for anyone here who is struggling, who is hurting, who is in need of trust. And Lord, maybe you're sending stuff their way so that they will, under compulsion, learn how to trust. But I pray, Lord, that they would also, from this lesson, learn how good you are. That because of what you've done, we have no need to fear. Thank you for this chance to study your holy word, for the lessons that we learn from it, for just how incredible it is to know you and your love. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.